I am Jerry Chester, if you have not met me yet. I am married to Mark Chester, the sabbatical pastor that some of you have never seen. He says hello. He will be back September 10th at the church picnic to start taking control of the ship again. It's been a good time. It's been different than what we expected for him to be on sabbatical, but very, very good. So he will tell y'all all about it when he gets back. But I'm glad to be here. I'm excited for what God has to say to us and what he will do within us after today. Okay, Philippians chapter 2. If you have a Bible, turn to Philippians chapter 2, New Testament, after the Gospels. I need to hear more paper. Does nobody bring their Bible to church anymore? Y'all start bringing your Bibles. Even though it's up here, touch it, see it. It's better than the phone. Anyway, or you can use your phone. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians is written to the church of Philippi by Paul. This book he wrote when he was on house arrest in Rome. It is the most joy-filled book that he wrote. It mentions Jesus like 40 times. It's a positive book where he's using the letter to encourage the church of Philippi. This is how you live. Do what Jesus does. This is what he did. This is how you live. So we're going to kind of break down one verse that he talks about in there, because I think it's a verse that's challenging and sometimes confusing. So, chapter 2, verse 12. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it's God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. So we're going to break that down. And I like to start at the very, very basic. So it says, work out your salvation. We're going to talk about that today. This whole year, the theme that Pastor Mark set was stewardship. So I would say it's how do you steward your salvation? But I'll talk about that, working out your salvation. So first you have to define the word salvation. And salvation's simply this, to deliver from sin and consequence. So work out your deliverance from sin and consequence in your life. Now I made y'all some cute little slides, okay? Because I'm just going to show you. This is what it means to have to accept salvation, to meet Jesus in your life, okay? Well, will it play all cutesy? The wages of sin is death. See how sad he is? He's on that side of the ravine. Some of you have seen this before. But the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ, which is that. So if we follow a sad fellow who doesn't know Jesus yet, oh, look at him go. These are cute, right? He's crawling across the cross because he's accepting Jesus, and he ends up on the other side. Ta-da! That's what just basic salvation is. That's not working out your salvation. That's what salvation is. And if you'll notice something, it's done. You don't do anything to earn it. You don't do anything. It's done because Jesus did it. We just accept it and we go through it. Does that make sense? It's very, very important. It is done. It doesn't say work on your salvation with fear and trembling, right? It says work out your salvation. There's a very, very big difference. And I know some of you come from different backgrounds. Or even in your personality type, you're like, oh, I gotta do this better, and I'm supposed to do this, and I have to check this box and to follow Jesus. And this sermon hopefully will make you go, ah, because you just have to work out your salvation. You don't have to work on it the way that we often think about it. And here's the cool part, because did you catch the rest of that verse? It says, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it's God who works in you to will and act according to his good purpose. So who's doing the actual work? God is in you, in me, in us. It says work it out, work out your salvation because God's doing all this work within you. So you just kind of go along for the ride. He did and does all the work. So what does it mean to work out your salvation? We've got five little things here that to think about, okay? One, it is personal because it says work out your salvation. I cannot work out my kid's salvation. If I could, I would. Right? But it's work out your salvation. It is personal. It's one-on-one, you and Jesus. That is how it works. If he's somebody else's God, you won't feel him or experience his presence in your life. It doesn't work that way. It is very personal. In fact, it's sort of telling in the Old Testament when Saul, King Saul, is talking to Samuel, the prophet, he says three times in chapter 15 of 1 Samuel, ask your God what we should do. This sacrifice was for your God. This is for your God, which tells me that King Saul did not have a personal relationship with the living God. He had a connection to God via Samuel. But when you talk about working out your salvation, there's a first process, and it is personal, and it has to do with you. Second one, it is active. Working out our salvation is active. I have in my notes, it's more than just putting on running shoes, right? Because if you switch it to working out physically, like I could put on running shoes and a running outfit, and I could tell you where I like to run, I could tell you what it does to the body, I could tell you how many calories you burn, but the reality, unless I actually work out, I'm not working out, even though to everybody else it would look like that I worked out. And if you change that to a spiritual perspective, when it says work out your salvation, I'm afraid most of us have no idea how to do that. We go to church, we read our Bible sometimes, we say the right things, we try to be good, right? But are you actually working out your faith? Are you actually taking the promises of God and trusting in them and exercising your faith? Because that's what it means to work out your salvation. It means you take what he says, you rest in it and trust in it, and you work it out in your life. Does that make sense? So it's more than putting on running shoes. It's active. It is also a process. Notice it says continue to work out your salvation. So that means I think the first step of faith that any of us can take is to meet Jesus. That takes a lot of trust in God, to meet him. But I don't care if you've known him for 2 weeks or you've known him for 45 years. It is a continual process that we get to choose to work out our salvation. Everything that Maddie said when she was up here, that's what it looks like to work out your salvation. I thought I was doing this. I felt this nudge from God. Then I shifted over here, but then I was afraid. Then I said yes to an internship, but then I freaked out, and then I was having a fit, but then God was faithful. That is what it looks like to work out your salvation. It takes effort and it takes energy, but it's not working for your salvation. Do you hear the difference? You don't earn it. You can't buy it. You can't be worth it. It's not working for your salvation. It's working out the salvation that Jesus died to give you already. It's already done. Are y'all with me? All right, so quiet and attentive. Number four, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. I would like to give you some fancy Greek word and some way to interpret that in a different way, but that's exactly what it means. As you are working out your salvation, as you're trusting God, as you're working those spiritual muscles to just rest in him, do it knowing how massive he is. He's powerful. He's huge. Right? With fear and then trembling, recognizing our own weakness and our desperate need for him. We live in a country that does not have a king. We have a democracy, which is wonderful. But spiritually speaking, we have no idea, most of us, what it means to serve a king, to be under the authority of a king, and the finality of what a king says. But that's what that means. As I'm growing in my faith, as I'm practicing what his promises in my life, do it with an utmost respect for his power and with a humbleness of heart to know, I don't deserve all the sweetness that he's given me. Does that make sense? Number five, it takes faith. And that's what I want to talk about for a little bit. Trusting in him in order to work out our salvation. Here's the definition of faith in Hebrews 11. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we do not see. It's not knowing about God. It's not faith to know about God. Many of us know all about him. I mean, it says the demons know about him because he's real, right? It's actually relying on him and resting in him. That is working out your salvation because it takes something from us. It takes a sacrifice from us. It's trusting in the mystery of who God is and what he says, which I say all the time. How do I know what he says if I'm not reading my Bible? How do we know what, if we're not worshiping, if we're not talking to him? There's a process of going through that. It takes faith, I said, to first meet Jesus. So here's the three-step process to meet Jesus, the first part of faith, all right? It's ABC in Vacation Bible School, and it's very basic, but for us to understand this, it starts with one, acknowledging our brokenness. So in order to trust God, in order to work out our faith, it starts with that very first meeting him, which some of you probably still need to do, which is awesome because you're in a great place. So acknowledging our brokenness and our fear, God, you are so right, I'm a mess. I am anxious all the time. I am afraid. Number two is trusting that what Jesus did on the cross, that covers it all. That you don't have to change who you are because he will change you as you get to know him. And then the third, well, let me say something first, because I was listening to a radio show and the guy was talking about someone else and he said, sometimes we struggle thinking we're not worthy of God's forgiveness. Or we look at our past and we think, or we look at yesterday and we think, oh, How could God love me when I did this, or I think this, or I can't get over this, or I'm stuck here? And this guy was quoting someone else, and the man had said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believed in him got everlasting life." And he said, "What is so special about your sin that if God could forgive the entire world, your specific sin is something hard to deal with?" I was like, that is so true. Because we think that sometimes. So just know that his Jesus covers it all and your sin is not a big deal to him, not a big effort. Number three, and then surrender. Now, if I have a gun and I say surrender, what do you do physically with your body? Come on, put them up. That's surrender. How much control do you have? None. The hardest part of working out your salvation is this posture right here. We can get to a place where we know we are messed up, and then Jesus, yeah, you cover it. But this right here, that is the hardest part of working out your salvation. It is easier to work on your salvation than it is to do this, which is why most of us try very hard to please God. But he says, without faith, it's impossible. I mean, he says, you surrender, and that is how you work it out. So that's what it takes to meet Jesus. But ironically enough, that is what it takes to work out your faith every day of our lives, the whole life, every day, same process, every morning. I messed up, God, I'm sorry. And Jesus, you did cover on the cross. And again, I just surrender to your authority and that you will fix it in my life and you will redeem me. So let me read this list here, just in case you're not connecting yet. It also takes faith, that process, and our willingness to go through that process to deal with our families, our future, our past, our fears, our gifts, and our dreams, our time. It takes faith to trust God with your time. Did you know that? Our job, our kids, our responsibilities, our bodies. It takes faith to trust God if he's telling you something to do or not do with your body to be able to just be like, God, I'm going to trust you, but this is what I want or this is what I don't want. Our marriages, our stuff, our money, our hearts, our mistakes, our pain, all of that is opportunities for us to work out our salvation by entrusting and surrendering all that to the Lord. It is a continual process of doing that. Here's an example. It's a current example in my life of working out your salvation. Here's some weights, right? These are like 50 pounds, 100 pounds, and 150 pounds. Oh, I'm so strong. Just kidding. Rough crowd. Okay, so this morning, I'm like, for some reason, anxious about speaking and like, what are you doing, God? And I know you're doing great stuff in our church family and it's exciting, da-da-da-da. And of course, you have to preach your own sermon at yourself, right? Okay, so God, how do I work out my faith? How do I feel peace because I'm like a little anxious? And here's the verse he gave me, Philippians 4:6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. Then the peace that passes understanding will guard your heart and mind in Jesus. That's just a fact. So how do you work that out in your life? How did I have to work that out this morning? I literally had to say, you say be anxious about nothing. Okay, God, well, I'm a little anxious about this morning. So can you just help me out? I'm giving it to you. I'm admitting it to you. And I know, Jesus, you're with me, so I don't have to be afraid. So I give you what you want to say this morning and how you want to do it. It's that easy or that hard. It's a choice, right? That's what it looked like to work out your salvation. He will never tell you the first time he wants you to work out your salvation, pack your bags and go to China. Because that's like a 500-pound weight, right? So what he does is he does this process of, trust me with your new haircut. Some of you think that's funny, but I did that in school one time. And then he'll say, okay, and then you do. And then there's this thing that happens, and it's cyclical, which I love. The more I trust him, the more I experience him. And when I experience him, I can trust him more. And then I experience him and his power and his faithfulness more. And then I trust him some more. And then I experience him some more. And then I'm kind of like, God, you gave me a 9-year-old. Today I give you my 9-year-old. And I trust that you will give me wisdom. And you know what I'm saying? But that's what it's like to work out. I'm not trying to be a better Christian. I'm not trying to do it better. I'm literally surrendering, saying, I got to work out the fact that you already died for me. You died for my anger. You died for my fear. You died for my pain. You died for my anxiety. You died for my control. Whatever it would be in our lives, we have to admit that we've got to kind of do that with him. All right. The reality is, without this process active in our lives, we are not working out our salvation. We're actually idle. Let me show you what I visualize in my cute little diagram, what it actually looks like for us. Most of us Christians, that's us when we meet Jesus, and then look what I think most of us do.
We chill there on the side, looking at the cross, overwhelmed by what God did for us and how much we didn't deserve it, looking at the past, reminded of the past, reminded of yesterday, reminded of our anger, our fear, our anxiety, and we just sit there and we're idle, and we were never meant to stay there. Never meant to stay there, because Jesus died so that we could have life, eternal life. That to me is not life. That's like nothing, just sitting, right? Because what we're supposed to do, like Paul said, I have run the race. I have finished it. I have done what God asked me to do. I've worked out my salvation. I am stronger. That's what we're meant to do. That's working out your salvation. You're moving. And then I had to think, well, then how do you remember the cross? How do you remember what God did for you? Well, there's this little thing, because our God is so smart, that we did last Sunday, and it's called communion. And at communion, he says, when you eat of this bread and you drink this cup, you remember what I did for you. You remember. So that's when we look back and we go, God, thank you for freeing me from that. And thanks for doing all this so that I can keep moving forward. Does that make sense? Hebrews 11:6, I mentioned it. Without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe he exists, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. He is a good, good daddy. He really is. But without faith, it's impossible to please him. Sometimes I think we get frustrated that we have to have faith to get through stuff. Sometimes I think we get frustrated that we have to have faith to get through tough situations instead of doing it all on our own. Like I said, it's easier to do it on our own sometimes. The reality is, faith is a supernatural privilege. It is a supernatural privilege. We have access to a secret weapon that we can use against all the painful, evil, and horrible that is broken in this world. When we exercise our faith, it actually gives us the upper hand. How are we doing? Get over here. This is Mike and Christine. They are my dear friends, and I wanted them to share a little bit this morning. Mike and Christine started coming to Gettysburg Foursquare at Middle Street about 7 years ago. They both were churched growing up, but didn't actually meet Jesus and start a relationship with him until the time when they got here, which is very exciting. But I want them to share a little bit of their story with you. You will notice that Mike is in a wheelchair because 2 years ago, he got diagnosed with ALS, and now they are navigating through that. You don't have to apologize. They were conversating. But I wanted them to share a little bit about their journey, because obviously all of our journeys are different, and this weight is a very heavy weight. Would you agree to exercise? But they are navigating it, although not perfectly. They're doing it very well. And so I wanted to chat with them a little bit. Do you have something to say right away? Smarty pants. So you guys met Jesus 7 years ago. How have, even prior to being diagnosed with ALS, Mike, you guys were exercising your faith in baby steps. Just baby steps, because you all got all starts with the small weights. So how has that journey been?
I can't talk.
You are not going to talk? Okay, I'll let her do it. How have you guys navigated through that? Easy, hard, easy to trust him?
Well, at first, when it's small little things, but then, of course, as you move through, as with the weights, you just start doing it.
Are there things that you know now that would have been really hard 2-3 years ago that now are easy to trust God with? She's freezing up. Because it takes faith to do what you're doing right now, doesn't it?
It seemed so natural the first time. I miss all.
I told you, second service is hard. Look at them, too. They're all looking at you. But there's a journey that these guys have taken as you've navigated through this. Has it been easy in your relationship with God to walk through this process? What's been the healthy part? What's been the good part for you? What have you guys learned as you've walked through this? Because it's been 2 years now.
Well, we knew from the beginning that God had it, because ALS is incurable. So no human being can take this from us. And God is with us. So for us, Jesus has been who we look to for strength.
Yeah, it's when we were diagnosed, we didn't get angry at God. We didn't get mad at him. We didn't blame him. You know, it's just a bad break. But God, through Jesus, is the one that helps us get through every day. We get up in the mornings, and we do our devotion together. I pray throughout the day. At night, we pray before we go to bed. And one of the nicest things is it has brought Chris and I so close. We have just fallen more and more in love through this. She's my angel. I mean, I can't do anything. I can't hug her. And I want to. I can't hold her hand. And I want to. And God says, I got this for you. I'll hug her. I'll squeeze her.
Mm-mm-mm. We do. I mean, Jesus is who we have to talk to. We talk to ourselves in our heads. Whew. That other voice will really beat you up. But Jesus is love. And he is the best person to talk to and gain strength. We find our hardest time in the night or in as we're trying to get ready for bed. And he's exhausted, I'm exhausted, and we're trying to do this whole routine to get him into bed. And at that time, I'm like at the end of my rope. And if I didn't have Jesus, yeah, I get jumped.
He said she gets grumpy.
If I didn't have Jesus, it would be easy to walk out the door and say, you know what, let someone else do this. But with God, who made us one, we're doing this together. We're walking this out together. And when it gets really, really hard, we're on our knees and we're like, okay, I need that strength that only you can give us. And he has never failed us. We're still here. And we're together.
And just to balance it out, there are days it is hard.
Absolutely.
Where you want to, both walk out the door. Yeah. Or scoot out the door. You're going to put on your running shoes. My friend, you will run again.
That's the other thing that keeps me going, is I know where I'm going to end up. And that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think when you have physical stuff, obviously, it's hard because you're the same inside. This just is not cooperating with you. Yeah, it's true. But this is an example of an extreme. Now, I'll be honest with you, in our life, when we have circumstances that are extreme, whether it be a family member or a debt or something, or health, you either get mad at God, like Mike said, they chose not to, or you push into God, right? The reality is, we do not have to wait for some extenuating circumstance to get us to work out our faith, to work out our salvation. Because we can all do it, we can choose to do it today. Like, God, I want to start with the small weights. Because with these guys, and they're my friends, so I know, they were working out the small weights before this big weight dropped in their lap. That God prepared them and they were ready. And so my encouragement and my challenge for me and for us is that we would choose to work out our salvation, what Jesus died to give us, before we have no other option to do so. Because where else do you go? So if everything's going great for you and you got a family and it's good, just think of, God, I want to do this. It is a big deal and it's a command. And he says, work out that salvation with fear and trembling. And God's already doing stuff in your lives. They do not sit on the edge of the cliff just dilly-dallying. You might be in a wheelchair, Mike, but you guys are running.
Yeah, I got 6 gears.
You have 6 what?
Gears.
You have 6 gears. Mike has 6 gears. Smarty pants. See, he hasn't changed at all. He just can't slap me.
Yeah, they do.
They do, yeah. Anyway, thank you guys for sharing just a tidbit. There's so much more. And if you ever want to get together with them or glean from them, call them and stop by and hang out with them.
I do have to say, people always say, oh, well, I don't want to intrude. Our house is an open house. Our lives are an open book. I always feel like we, as people, get to share things, or we experience things that in someday down the road, we get to share that with someone else and walk alongside someone else through their journey. So
We have been blessed, absolutely.
You now know God's presence more than you ever did before. Thanks, guys. Y'all give them a hand. Mike and Christine. You got it all? All right, she knows how to do it. She's an angel without wings, that's for true. I can't find where I just told you what I told you, but I'm going to find it in a second. That it is supernatural, that working out our salvation, faith is a supernatural weapon that we can use despite that or anything you guys have going on in our lives and anything I have going on, big or small. Faith is that supernatural weapon that God says, oh, if you will trust me, if you will work out your salvation and trust what I have already done for you, rest in it and surrender to it, I will take you and take you above all the things that hit you. And here's what's crazy. Even now, we often measure our faith compared to those around us, right? Because I know what the enemy has whispered in some of y'all's ears right now. I don't know how they do it. I don't have that much faith, and I don't even have that many problems. Man, I stink. I need to start having more faith. I need to trust God more. Okay, or the other extreme, I'm doing pretty good compared to everyone else. We compare ourselves. I'm doing pretty good. Those two extremes, right, we think sometimes, but our faith is personal, and it is measured by how much our lives are surrendered to the Lord based in your circumstances. So you could have the same measure of faith in your life. It's just different circumstances. Does that make sense? It's personal. Mike and Christine aren't heroes as much as they are amazing examples of what it means to work out your salvation. And because of that, they are experiencing the incredible peace and joy and fullness and richness of God's presence, who he is, because of that. Each of us can do the same where we are because he promises never, ever, ever to leave us. And I don't know that we actually, including myself, really know how powerful that statement is, that Jesus said, I will never leave you. I will not leave you when your kids are driving you crazy. I will not leave you when you get that report from the doctor. I will not leave you when you're not sure what to do. I will not leave you when you're overwhelmed in your head with chaos. I will not leave you when you don't know how you're going to pay the bills. I will not leave you, period. Like, he's there. And to work out our salvation is to access him 24 hours a day and rely on him and surrender to him. Okay, two quick things here as we close up. I want to talk about blind spots and something else, but blind spots. 840,000 blind spot related accidents happen in America every year. Anyone been involved in a blind spot accident? Couple of you, excellent. That's not good. Blind spot is this. Here's the definition, okay? It says an area where a person's view is constricted. Think about this spiritually when I talk about blind spots, because working out our salvation, blind spots are a small problem. Here's another one in anatomy. It says point of entry in the optical nerve of the retina, which is insensitive to light. If you take that and apply that to what we're talking about today, a blind spot literally is a point in your retina that does not have sensitivity to light. Jesus is light. You get it? We don't get it. We don't see. A blind spot is not fun because you do not see it because it's a blind spot. You got it? And I will tell you, we all have them. And I will tell you who knows a lot about your blind spots is the people close to you in your life. Because they see them when you don't. It's like if you're driving down a road, you can see a blind spot of a truck. You just don't want to live there because you could easily get hurt by that blind spot, right? So it's true for us as people too. Working out our salvation is actually volunteering to allow God to expose our blind spots. Ugh, we all have them. There's a verse in Psalms 19:12 and it says this. Who perceives his unintentional sins? Cleanse me from my hidden faults. And blind spots are weird because we do not see them. Like, legitimately, you don't know what your blind spots are, right? But this is how they're revealed, and this is how you can be like, ooh, I must have them because I'm still doing this. Here are some examples. I'm lazy. I'm judging. I tend to gossip. I'm sarcastic. I have fear. I'm controlling. I have anger. I'm resentful, pride, critical. I'm disobedient, rebellious. I have chaos in my head. I'm anxious. I'm ungrateful. I'm jealous. I'm sexually off. I'm hard-hearted. I'm suicidal. I'm relying on alcohol or other substances too much, sugar, whatever. I'm isolated. I'm an abuser. I am busy all the time. I have negativity. Hopefully that touches everybody. Because those things are a result of us having blind spots, not allowing, if you're a Christian, not allowing God's salvation to work it out in your life. And so if any of those touch any of y'all, then listen up, because that's a blind spot. Here's the problem when you speak on Sunday. You have to talk to God about what you're speaking about. So I was running the other day, Thursday morning, and I'm like, God, I really don't want to know, but can you show me a blind spot that I have? But I don't want to know. I'm literally out loud in my neighborhood, but I don't want to know. But you got to show me something, because I should really talk about something fresh. But I'm scared. What are you going to show me? Because it should be scary, honestly. Because blind spots are embarrassing. Ugh. They reveal something ugly in ourselves. Well, do you know what he told me? No, you don't, but I'm going to tell you. I'm running, and he said just like this, Jerry, you spend a lot of time in your mind focusing on what you have to do and who you need to be and what needs to do, doctor filling everything and thinking about this and that. He said, you've been self-focused your entire marriage, and you have not actually ever put Mark's interests above your own. That's not a blind spot. Like, that's the whole side of the bus. Like, I didn't know that. And I'm literally like, are you kidding me? I just wanted a little example. Why did you have to give me that one? Because I had to share it. But I was crazy that I had never seen that. Again, it's embarrassing, but take it where you will. Yours are embarrassing too. That I have never in my entire marriage put Mark's interests consistently above my own. I don't even know how to think that way. Like, what does Mark want to do today? What does Mark need right now? Blech! But this is just honest. But it's a blind spot. And the minute he told me, it allows me to go through that process. I stink, Jesus, but you have a way to fix it, and I'm just going to surrender it to you. Right? That was just mine. I cannot tell you what your blind spots are, but he can. And he will if you ask him. And once he does, it's not a matter of, okay, now I've got to learn how to be more focused on Mark. It's literally, I surrender. God, you want to love him through me? Help me to do it, because I don't apparently know how very well. Oh, that's embarrassing. Anyway, so that's my blind spot that you can look at. And you know, it's funny, someone came up to me after last service and they said, oh my goodness, I have a car that tells me my blind spots. It beeps every time I am in my blind spot. And she goes, it's a Lexus. I'm like, well, that's because it costs us something to have a sensitivity to God's spirit to be able to know what our blind spots are. But if you are driving and you need that, get a Lexus. It's expensive, but it's apparently worth it because it's beat for her before. Okay, so King David also apparently had blind spots. One being, he had an affair with a married woman and then murdered her husband and was completely unaware that that was probably not appropriate. Completely. This is the one that God says, David is a man after my own heart. How is that possible that as a Christian who loves God and wants to, we can have a blind spot that stinking big that we can have someone murdered because we slept with their wife and got her pregnant? That's a big blind spot. But here's what's cool. It doesn't say David had God's heart. It says David was a man after God's heart. That I can do. That we can do. We can seek God's heart and desire it so that we're sensitive to his spirit and his nudges and hear him when he's pointing out blind spots and navigate through that. Because later on in Psalms, in 139, David said, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Show me my blind spots. What are your blind spots in your life? Areas where you have yet to work out the freedom that Jesus died to give you. What are they? You can't see them, but those around you can. And what if you assume you can see everything? Like Maddie said, I thought I knew all about worship, but you can't. There is damage happening in your life. And what damage is it causing? This is a crazy reality I thought of yesterday. He exposes our blind spots. Then he invites us to live by faith as he repairs them, which means we end up walking with him as we work out our salvation blindly. Because it takes faith to work out your salvation. So instead of blind spots, he goes, okay, now go. I gotcha. This is crazy. Trade one for the other. All right, the second thing I want to touch on real quick before we go, all right, is the narrow path. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Is that how you picture it? Because that's how I've always pictured it, this little narrow path. Right? But what if it looks like this? Or we went through that in our RV, but I'll let Mark share that whole story because that was a little nutsy cuckoo. Okay, what if it looks like the other one? That's on the battlefield. What if that's what it looked like to walk the narrow path, but it's just wall the entire way? you're going to scrape your skin. You're going to like have to bend. You're going to have to be a little uncomfortable in order to squeeze through, right? And I was talking to a friend of mine about this. She actually brought this up. Working out our salvation, walking the narrow path, you have to put skin in the game, which is a choice to be uncomfortable. It's a choice to let God prune you when he says, I want the arm. And you're like, I'm not giving you the arm. And he says, but I want the arm. I'm not giving you the arm. And then you say, you're right, my arm is not good. Jesus, you died for it. Here, take it. He cuts it off. It's painful. And then we go, oh, wait, that's my real arm. That's a better arm. But you have to go through the narrow path in order to find life, because we got to get rid of all the stuff that he needs to cut off of us. Working out our salvation is putting skin in the game. It's choosing to live different and trust God, even though it's uncomfortable. And I don't know what he's telling you, what that looks like in your life. But I know there's a standard of holiness that's here. And in our culture, our standard is down here. So we tend to think as believers, we're doing pretty good. I went to church this month. I read my Bible. I listened to that TV show. I have Christian music. The level is down here. And God says, man, my standard's here. So you work out your salvation so that I can get you to a place of healthy and whole and life and joy and peace that's up here. Leviticus, God says to the priests, you are distinguished between what is holy and what's ordinary. And if you're a Christian now, on this side of the cross, he said it's priesthood of the believer. Like, we're priests. We're functioning in his kingdom. And he would say to us today, you are to distinguish between what is holy and what is ordinary. And there's a lot of ordinary that we think is okay, that God says, no, work out your salvation. Trust me with that habit. Trust me with that way you think. Trust me with what you cling to because you're too scared to deal with your past. He says, trust him. 1 Corinthians 10:23 says, I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything's beneficial. And I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. God only knows that. He only knows what he needs to work out in your life. It is easy to compare ourselves with culture and think we're doing good, but who is God calling you to be? What kind of faith do you need to exercise in order to grow up in your faith? It is not works. You do not work for your salvation, but we do work it out, and it's a process to do that. Where do you still need to submit to the Lord and trust him more so you can work out your salvation? Where are your blind spots? Are you willing to ask him? Where's the narrow path for you? Only he knows what that looks like and what needs to get cut off. And are you willing to trust him enough to take it and experience what it means to experience his presence and stuff? I have a song that I heard a couple weeks ago by Switchfoot. It's called I Won't Let You Go, and it's written from a perspective of God saying it to us. And I want us to listen to it. And ooh, my heart's desire is that you, as many of you as possible, could come do business with him. That you would ask him, come forward. There's something powerful about, this is not an altar, but it's an altar because your heart goes before the Lord and saying, God, what are my blind spots? Or God, I've got this fear, it exposes something, I don't know what it is. What narrow path do you have for me? Where am I compromising? Where do I need to surrender? Where do I need to trust you? There's a bunch of stuff. And I know he's talking to you. His spirit does that kind of stuff. So please come down. If you need to surrender to Jesus for the first time and practice that little faith cycle, if you need to acknowledge to him your desire to trust him more, if you need to let go and let him take what you work so hard for, give him your fears, give him your past, give him your blind spots and invite him to search your heart. I just invite us now. There will be people that are here if you want to pray with them. But I would say for most of us, it's just a matter of trusting God enough to get your bum out of a seat, walk 15 chairs, come over and kneel down for a couple minutes and just talk to him. Let this be a moment you don't miss where you can encounter him and he can deposit something in you that changes something forever. Okay? So listen to this song. Do business with him there or come forward here, but let him minister to you as he reminds you of who he is. Okay? You guys think about where he's pointing out a blind spot or showing you you don't trust him like you thought you do. He's faithful and his promises are true and he really did die for you to have life. Jesus, even as we sit here in the quiet, I trust that your spirit is running around the room and that you're talking to us. You adore each one of us, no matter what. I know that is true. You know where we are in our relationship with you. You know where we need to trust you more. You know the blind spots that are massive in our lives, and they're just hurting us and hurting the people around us. God, may we have the courage to trust you to ask. May we have the courage to just invite you to teach us and show us what we need to get. Can you guys stand up for me? It's funny. This is life. You plan stuff. It doesn't work out, right? music doesn't get turned on for whatever reason. But you know what? It's cool because it doesn't matter. Because God is working and he does what he does despite what we plan. So working out our salvation is learning to say, God, it doesn't matter. You are doing what you're doing and I will trust you. I will trust you. I know there's still more of you that need to come down here, that need to pray with people. You need someone to walk with you because you can't even begin to see your blind spots. But I trust that God's Spirit is working inside of us. He has taken this big ship called Gettysburg Foursquare. I believe he is turning us towards back to Middle Street. We will be moving back in a couple months. We have no idea what he's going to do with us. But we know it is going to be amazing. I don't know what he's going to do with us. But he's going to do something in our church family that spills out all over the world in an amazing way. And I'm not being exaggerating. I think he's going to do great things. But it starts in us. And allowing him to just search us and know us and find anything in us that's preventing us from just being free so that that world out there sees what freedom looks like and wants it. Let me pray for you guys. God, you really will never let us go. And some of us do have fear and it's our currency. It's what we function in. We have things in the past that we can't let go and we've got all this stuff and we've got real issues now, real family issues or health issues or just fear. There's people in this room, God, that are paralyzed with anxiety and fear and they can't move. In the name of Jesus, I just pray your life and your peace and your presence and your courage over us that we may have the ability to surrender to you. God, I don't like it, but continue to show me blind spots. Continue to make me into the Jerry you died for me to be. And I pray that for everyone in this room. God, that we would be who you made us to be. That we wouldn't allow ourselves to be mediocre. Blech, I hate that. God, you are so good and you love us. And as we walk out of here and to get some yummy peach ice cream, that you would continue to marinate this stuff inside of us. Change us and set us free. May we have the courage to trust you. You are a good God. We just praise you. And I just thank you that you're here, that you're real. We continue to pray for Mike and Christine and Mackenzie and Sean as they navigate through this very, very difficult time. May you continue to bless them with abundant faith. May they be filled with your peace and your joy. God, we love you. I just thank you for just right now. Do something with it. In Jesus' name, amen.